save. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Midpoint Friday. I'm your host, Janelle Irwin. Frank Knox is our engineer today. And Cindy is wrangling the phones for us. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, there will be tons to talk about. The number to call is 813-239-9663. On the slate today, the obvious low-hanging fruit is the inauguration coming up in 5 days on Wednesday when Joe Biden will officially take office as the 46th president of the United States, and Donald Trump will no longer be the 45th president. He'll still be the 45th president, but he won't be acting president anymore. I know a lot of people out there are probably clapping their hands over that right now. So, but in the meantime, there is a lot going on. So the FBI sent out a memo earlier this week saying that there was... they anticipated there being armed protests in all 50 state capitals in addition to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. So obviously, state capitals all across the United States are on high alert, including Tallahassee here in Florida. The county courthouse in Tallahassee has been shut down in preparation. Senate President Wilton Simpson has asked staff who might be inclined to work over the weekend because they are in the middle of a committee week up there. He's asked them to do their work from home and not at the Capitol. There's increased law enforcement presence. So definitely high alert up there. However, there's always a but when we're talking about Florida. However, Governor Ron DeSantis has not, I repeat, not requested any of the Florida National Guard that has been activated to offer support at the state capitol. They have been requested and are being sent to support security efforts in Washington, D.C. To combat threats up there. Of course, there's now infamous images of guardsmen sleeping in the hall, marble-lined halls of the Capitol as they really get Washington, D.C. on lockdown. But no such requests here in Florida. So I don't know about you, but I'd be staying the heck away from Tallahassee right about now. So that's on the slate. Again, the number to call is 813-239-9663. I also want to know what folks think about impeachment. This is my first show on the air since Donald Trump has become the first president in United States history to have been impeached twice. Half of all United States impeachments are against Donald Trump. Half of them. Yes. The only other two are, Andrew Jackson and Bill Clinton. So, yeah. Now, granted, they had more articles filed against them than Trump cumulatively has. This latest one has just one, incitement of insurrection. And it was approved on Wednesday, and now it just awaits a trial in the Senate, which will happen after Trump already leaves office. So there's some legal questions about whether or not you can even have a conviction trial in the Senate after a president leaves office. But it looks like it's going to happen. So I want to know what you think about that. Was it silly to go through this process when the president was already on his way out the door anyways? Was this prudent to send a message that this type of incitement will not be tolerated? Is it further dividing our nation, or is this a step in unifying our nation? What are your thoughts? 813-239-9663. Also on the slate today, I want to talk about the latest economic package that President-elect Joe Biden has proposed, $2 trillion package, and it includes a holy cow, ton of stuff. I have a long list that I can rifle through here, and I will in a minute. But the biggest thing, obviously, that people are paying attention to is that it would finally bring that $2,000 stimulus to American individuals and families. It wouldn't be another $2,000 on top of the $600 that most of you may have already received. It would be $1,400 to bring that $600 to $2,000. It includes a ton of other stuff as well, surrounding vaccine distribution, surrounding getting schools back open, small business help, tax breaks for the middle class. I mean, just all sorts of stuff. Further health care subsidies for people who have lost employee-sponsored health care since the pandemic began. It's very, very, very robust. And of course, Democrats are very much in support of it, and Republicans are likely going to, even those like Senator Marco Rubio, who support the $2,000 stimulus payments, are likely to kind of balk at some of the other provisions in the package that they view as sort of a poison pill on, you know, tax and spend liberal type of mentality. So it'll be interesting to see what happens once that actually gets on the floor for a debate. It'll easily pass the United States House of Representatives with their majority. It might face a little bit more of a challenge in the Senate because there will be, when it comes to the floor, a 50-50 split with Kamala Harris being the tie-breaking vote. These types of large packages typically need 60 votes, a two-thirds majority, in order to avoid things like the filibuster that really keep them from coming through. But with all of that on the slate, I'm going to open up the phone lines. Again, the number to call is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org or shoot us a text to 813-433-0885. Let's go to Camilla. In Clearwater. Did I say your name right? I'm so sorry if I didn't. Do I have you? Okay, I think we might be experiencing some difficulties with our phone lines right now. It looks like Frank is on it. So while we wait for that to get remedied, hang out on the phone lines there. If you're on hold, I'll get to you in just a moment. But before I do, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the details that are in this economic package. So in addition to the additional stimulus funds that it would include, it would also increase federal unemployment compensation from the current $300 a week to $400 a week, and it would expand payments through September. The original plan that was just approved last month was approved for only 11 weeks, so that's a pretty substantial increase. Rental assistance would be included as part of an extended eviction moratorium, and that includes an additional $25 billion for rental assistance for a total of $50 billion. There was already $25 billion in the original package. $5 billion for utility assistance, $5 billion for local governments to battle homelessness, $25 billion emergency fund for child care, plus another $15 billion to help child care facilities, including home-based facilities, to pay for rent, utilities, payroll, and various other increased costs associated with the pandemic. It would increase the earned income tax credit for childless adults to about $1,500 and increase the maximum income eligibility to $21,000. So that's a pretty big deal when it comes tax time. The affordable health care subsidies would be expanded so that enrollees would not have to spend more than 8.5% of their income on coverage, and that is to account for all of the folks who have lost employee-sponsored coverage as a result of the pandemic. Just some other highlights: $20 billion for a national vaccination program, $170 billion for K-12 schools, $20 billion to the hardest hit public transit agencies to avert layoffs and route cuts. It's not clear whether or not that would include any of our local transit agencies. Pinellas County seems to be doing okay. Hillsborough's having a little bit more of a hard time, so we'll see how those decisions shake out and what that means here locally. But there's a ton more, and I've got probably 20 more examples here on my list that I can go through throughout the show, but that's just kind of a sampling of them. Let's try the phones again. Let's go to Jack in Riverview. Jack, what's on your mind?
Identify with, you know, the Confederacy and the families that lost family members, that they were divided, you know, over human rights issues.
Hey, Jack, can I cut you off? Because we had a little glitch there, and we missed like the first 10 seconds of you talking. So can you just start over?
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I've called in before saying that, you know, I identify with, or I have identified in the past with Confederate families, you know, whose families were torn during the Civil War over human rights issues.
Okay, you're going to have to go into that a little bit more for me here. So
basically, all I'm saying is that this year, if I participate in any reenactments, I've decided to just go as a flower child and to just wear some kind of a tie-dye uniform, because I just think that you know, at some point you just have to kind of change your way of thinking. And after what I've seen with the insurrection and everything, whatever my beliefs are, it's not as important as solidarity and just believing that people are more important than whatever our political beliefs are.
What exactly are your beliefs, pray tell?
With regards to the Confederacy?
Sure.
Well, I guess I don't really have an opinion. I guess you could sum it up with the fact that I enjoy the TV show South Park, where Cartman was General Lee, or he portrayed himself as one of the generals. You know, it's an animated cartoon, right?
Yes, I'm familiar with South Park.
He recruited people by giving out free peppermint schnapps, or no, s'mores flavored schnapps. And so that's pretty. That's about as far as.
Well, you started off by saying that you sympathized with Confederate families who were torn up. I'm paraphrasing here. Were torn apart over civil rights issues. What do you mean? Like, are you saying that you feel bad for them because maybe people didn't like them anymore because they were racist?
No, I'm saying that. From what I understand, that in some Southern families, there were brothers that actually one fought for the North and another fought for the South. They were on opposing teams, actually.
Sure. Absolutely. That happened.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that, you know, human rights issues, I think it's something that's core to a person's core beliefs, to their heart, what their heart tells them. And I would hope that, you know, their belief in a higher power. And, you know, my choice to believe in a higher power, I cannot look at a person of color and look at their little baby and not say that that's not a human being.
What? What the hell did you just say? You can't look at a person of color who has a baby and think that that's a human being?
No, and say that that is not a
human being. Oh, thank God. You really scared me there for a second. I was going to get very upset with you.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You see, and a lot of times in these heated moments, these moments of passion, you know, simple statements like that get taken out of context. And then, you know, a lady gets shot in the neck and now she's dead, you know, because she maybe had a peaceful intention in going to the Capitol.
Well, maybe she had a peaceful intention of going to the Capitol, but she was told numerous times to get back and to stop trying to force her way through a broken window. And she continued to move forward and then got herself shot. So
that's true.
I mean,
well, just one other thing I'd like to add really quickly on more of a personal note is that, you know, what I've seen, you know, when people with FEMA and stuff, when the National Guard is called out, they immediately put up tents. They established, you know, a headquarters. And to see those guys sleeping in the hallways, they have tents. They have inflatable tents. They really need to step up their game. If they're going to represent, you know, the government and Joe Biden, they really need to, you know, get some food there for those guys, get some cots, get a place for them to sleep. And, you know, let's step up our game a little bit.
I hear you, Jack. Thank you so much for the call. And I'm sorry that I thought that you said that black babies weren't humans.
Understand. Thank you. I'm glad you would have corrected me, and I would have been a horrible person having...
Oh, Lord. That would have been awful. I would have never forgiven you, Jack. All right. Well, you have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate you. You know, there was other, speaking of National Guard soldiers sleeping on floors in the Capitol, there was reporting by the Washington Post this week about Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, her husband. And they have this, you know, nice house in a lovely suburb out just outside of Washington, D.C. And they have, of course, their own Secret Service detail. And it came out that Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner did not allow their Secret Service detail to use bathrooms in their home. So there was this whole thing of what do we do? And for a little while, they were going down the block to the Obama's house, where there's a bathroom in a garage that isn't used. And the Obama's Secret Service detail actually uses it as kind of like a break room and everything. So they used that for a little while. For a little while, they were driving a mile down to uh, the the naval residence where the vice president and his wife live. Then they were just using random restaurants who were kind enough to let them use the facilities. There was a porta potty put out on the sidewalk for a little while until neighbors had a fit and they were like, not in our neighborhood. So anyways, $3,000 a month it costs the Secret Service to rent a basement in someone's home so that the security detail for Ivanka Trump and her husband had a place to relieve themselves. Holy guacamole. Of course, I would not be a professional if I didn't point out that for the purposes of that report, Ivanka Trump and her husband, their spokespeople said that's not the case. We were not the ones who said they couldn't come in the house. It was the Secret Service who made that determination. Whatever. So take it with a grain of salt if you want. But there were enough other sources that I think make it sound like they just weren't allowed to go in the house. Let's go to Marilyn and Bradenton. Marilyn, what's on your mind?
Good day. I love Jack. Well, takes me back, and I want to go forward with the same ideas he has.
Josh?
The first caller.
Oh, Jack. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. You know, this is all based on fear. And I hear the fear from our congresspeople about how if we go forward with, you know, going against the grain of these supremacists, that it'll just make it worse. I don't know how we can make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have to just prepare for a fight. Nobody wants, me and Jack. But I think it's just, stop burying our heads and face reality and all the lies that is not going away. And that we need to continue to just use the law and, you know, pull the rats, let the rats get on video and just go with that and just do our best to get it all over with if we can.
I would be on board with getting it all over with as quickly as possible, Marilyn. I agree with you there.
Well, thank you.
You have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for calling. If you would like to get in on the conversation here on Midpoint Friday, I am Janelle Irwin. The number to call is 813-239-9663. We have a few lines open here. So let's throw some more fuel onto the fire here. I reported last week for the publication for which I'm an editor, Florida Politics, on Republicans leaving the party in sort of a mass exodus. And since then, it's only gotten worse. So as of yesterday, the numbers were in Pinellas County since the insurrection, January 6th, since then, 812 Republicans had left their party. Meanwhile, in that same county during that same period, only 108 Democrats had done so. In Hillsborough, it's even worse. 950 Republicans left the party. Only 138 Democrats left their party. In Miami-Dade, it was 826 Republicans who left the party versus 143 Democrats. Duval County Supervisor of Elections has not yet gotten back to me with updated numbers. Duval County is Jacksonville. But in the first 2 days following the insurrection, they had 324 Republicans leave the party and only 54 Democrats. So the numbers for Democrats in each of these counties, which I selected to kind of to create, a picture of the whole state. You've got North Florida, you've got Central Florida with the Tampa Bay area, and then South Florida. The numbers of Democrats leaving the party are pretty standard. These are typically what you see on any given day for various parties. People are constantly coming and going from political parties. The hundreds and hundreds happening among Republicans is not normal, and it didn't happen until after the insurrection last Wednesday. So there is a very clear correlation there between what happened. Now, the interesting thing, while I would venture to say that most of those people are probably leaving the party because of what happened last Wednesday and because of what it means for the Republican Party, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of those people are leaving the Republican Party because they're mad at Trump. There's at least one person in Hillsborough County who left the Republican Party because she did not think that Republicans were doing enough to defend the president. This was the strategic communications director for the Hillsborough County Republican Party. I don't have 100% confirmation of who it was, so I'm not going to say the name. I'm 99.9% sure of who it is, but I did not get absolute confirmation, so I'm just going to err on the side of caution. But this individual wrote a very long Facebook post on the Hillsborough County Republican Party's Facebook page that has since been removed, explaining why she was leaving the party. And it was because it wasn't Trumpy enough, basically. So who knows? But regardless, the Republican Party is facing a crisis like no other. I mean, they are just, I don't know how Republican leaders are making decisions right now without pulling their hair out, because I mean, you have what is clearly documented through data, people leaving the party for whatever reason. You don't know if they're going to come back. You don't know if this is going to splinter the party into two parties, which would be catastrophic, and I'm sure Democrats would rejoice. I mean, there's just so many implications here. And the big question is, do we condemn Trump, or do we continue to stay behind him? And here in Florida, that's an even harder question, because Florida has very forgiving Trump supporters who are not, in some cases, concerned with what happened with the insurrection. They are still loyal to him. You know, it's one of the many reasons why it makes sense that the first family, most of them, are moving to Florida after their days in the White House and in Washington, D.C., because they're not welcome in New York anymore. Social circles there are saying, nope, we don't want you. And, you know, here in Florida, there's plenty of people who are still all too happy to live it up in high society with the Trump family. So that's just another interesting little bit of information there as well. Again, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Patty in Sarasota. Patty, what's on your mind?
Hi. First of all, Janelle, my last name's Irwin.
Oh.
I don't know if we're distantly related. I spell it with an E.
Oh, no, mine's an I.
Okay, so we're not. But it would have been nice to claim you.
Oh, anyway, I'm sure I'd love to claim you too, Patty. Let's just do it anyways.
I have a couple of things. Number one, the guy that called about, you know, the Confederate soldier, that thing. And when he said the woman who was shot in the neck was peaceful protesting, going through the window.
Well, he said she might have been. And I kind of called him out.
If you were up into that area, no, you were not. I have a friend who had a friend from Virginia. They went in to support Trump. They were 2 miles away, and she said everybody's sitting around in lawn chairs at their sides. They had no idea what was going on in the front end there. So everybody in that front end was not peaceful. They were, you know, they were out to kill. So how on earth am I peaceful if I begin to bang on a window and they're trying to protect people inside? Okay. So that's the problem we also have with the mental issues with people with Trump. And I think people, this is going to sound really wacky, I stand between what I call now evangelical Trumpians and the liberal left, you know, okay? I am a believer in the Bible and Jesus. What I see this as with Trump, once in a century, and we've had strong leaders with personality, and people gather around them and love them, and there's a Messiah complex. I remember when everybody was giddy over Obama, and I'm like, oh, God, you're going to end up hating him. You'll be mad at him because you're, you know, you got to let him be a human. He's not going to be the savior. And I had friends that were very wealthy that I worked for, and they were devastated by Obama. I'm like, okay, that's because, well, this time around with Trump, a once in a century, I believe, kind of like Hitler, charismatic, sort of we could call a blessed individual with talents and abilities. He has come along, and he has been able, with many groups, Christians, you name it, to spiritually hijack their inner heart and soul because they want a savior. Everybody's looking, you know, looking for the savior. And they're not looking far enough up. So you get a human being who can BS you and say, I am an emissary of that savior, God, and convince you that I will protect you, and that they, the other side, they're the sinners. They're the evil ones. We are not. Right there denying biblical truth.
So let me stop you for just a second, Patty, and ask you a question, because you're on to something here. I have never been able to understand how an evangelical Christian, I am unabashedly an atheist, so I do not understand religious people. I respect them, and I respect their faiths, but I am not a believer myself, in all honesty. But I've never understood how evangelical Christians, or any Christians for that matter, because I did grow, I had a Methodist minister for a grandfather, for example, so I understand what the religions are and such. How could anybody like that look at somebody who brags about grabbing women by the you-know-what and, you know, just all of the, I mean, the list is too long to even go down, the things that he has said and done that are so totally you know, counter to everything that Christianity is supposed to stand for. How did they ever get duped into thinking that he was somehow their savior? I just don't understand.
Because they've mixed political issues that they do, that people do care about. That's fine. You care about them, whatever. What they've done is they've been, I said the word hijack. It is a hijacking. Mm-hmm. It is taking, and the word religion I hate, because, you know, Jesus never came to establish, in my opinion, religion. He came to establish a new life, get on board, so you don't, you know, go nuts like we're nuts right now. That's my theory. It's very simplistic. But I think they were, when you have an insecurity or you feel persecuted, Trump has mastered the victim-victor syndrome. They're very unfair to me. They're very unfair. That suddenly makes us all want to, oh, the poor boy, you know, oh, we want to. Oh, they want to take care of him. And then I will champion. I will do this for you. Then they're the victor against the evil. They don't understand. And I know you're not a believer, but I love different scripture quotes that two of them I love, when Jesus said to his disciples, I send you out as sheep among the wolves. Be wise as the serpent and gentle as a dove. What's he's saying? You better know. The snakes in the grass and the workings of the enemy. It's very intricate. It's inside people's psyches. He knows where to put his finger on the vulnerable. And if he has somebody powerful enough, you get dragged along. And I think that's happened with Trump. And the only other thing that I would like to say about anything scriptural is he also said, beware. Satan often comes as an angel of light. So to them, this was like a light, a new beginning. And they didn't consult truly God, praying, and looking in the Bible. And that's why they listened to the mouth of Trump, who had totally twisted anything biblical, because he knew what people wanted to hear. And that's
I think it's much more simple than that, Patty. I think they wanted somebody who would give them conservative Supreme Court justices and get rid of Roe v. Wade.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
I think it's as simple as that. I think it only boils down to they were willing to get in bed with the devil if it meant getting rid of abortion.
Yeah, but see, that's also devilish, because my question has been, as I've written to my, I guess you could say, conservative evangelical Trumpians, I've said, okay, fine. No, okay, nobody wants babies to have to be aborted. We can all agree on that. Everybody wants a baby to have a good life. You hear about parents leaving them in the swing, they die in the sun, blah, blah. I've heard horrible stories. So either way, there's going to be trouble with people and babies. Okay, so you put your cloak on of righteousness and say, no more abortion. Well, my question has been to the wealthy corporations, Hobby Lobby, Two Men in a Truck, the Pillow Man, and I'm sure there's others who are true, you know, evangelical Christians. They need to start funding. They need to start a corporation funding for then. If they want abortion, door shut. They need to have every city and town, according to population, they need to put up medical home centers to take care of women. They need a professional adoption agency. They better darn well find good parents for the babies, medical care, getting these women on their feet. So when that door closes like they want, the dark web ain't picking up the slack. See, there will be abortion, don't you think? Don't you think there's going to be options out there that are horrible?
I hear you, Patty, and I'm gonna stop on that, and I'm gonna harp on it for just a second. So stay with me.
You need to do. It's hypocritical. Amen. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much, Patty. I appreciate the call. You have a wonderful weekend. So you know, on the abortion, I should not go here because I get really fired up. On the abortion thing, I've said this once, and I'll say it 100 times. Patty was on to something a little bit with saying that there needs to be, you know, if you don't want abortion, there needs to be medical access to take care of these women, better options for adoption for them to, you know, send these unwanted children into homes that do want them, because there are plenty. I don't think that's going to solve the problem. It certainly wouldn't hurt. But the bottom line is as long as there are women who don't want to be pregnant, there are going to be abortions. The question is it going to be safe? If you want abortions to stop, even if they're never going to stop altogether, the best way to prevent abortions is to prevent unwanted pregnancies. So if you have such a problem with abortion, maybe you should rethink your stance on birth control and sex education and how to make sure that these young women are not becoming pregnant when they don't want to. And I'll take it one step further. Why don't we have a conversation with young men who can get a woman pregnant literally multiple times a day, every single day of the year, whereas a woman can only get pregnant, you know, once every 9 months, about their role in preventing unwanted pregnancies? There's a thing called condoms. They don't ruin your experience. Get over yourself. These are the conversations that we need to have. I'm sorry if that offends some people out there, but if you hate abortion, that's how you come as close as possible to eradicating it. Banning it is only going to have people go into back alleys with a wire coat hanger. Period. Full stop. There's my spiel. I always have at least one. Let's see, who's been on hold the longest? Let's go to Scott in Sarasota. Scott, what's on your mind?
Hey, I like the show, and I really didn't even prepare a statement from my own perspective. I just wanted to shed some light through the lens of a child, my son, 10 years old. And I'm asking him, you know, what he thought about some of this stuff. And it was amazing. You know what they say out of the mouths of babes, right? My kid says to me, he says, in the most non-judgmental way, he just says, well, people are either in a growth mindset or they're in a fixed mindset. And I look at him, I was like, wow, you essentially just clarified almost everything that's going on in the simplest way. And I think what a lot of people would like to perceive as genuinely good people making bad decisions, the majority of Trump supporters, the majority of people that support policies that don't actually work in their favor. And it's obvious that in order for there to be like a real serious dialogue in this country, for as long and arduous as it's been for however many decades now, it's not going to get any easier until people decide to get off the gas and stop being so critical and so judgmental, to the extent that they can't be open-minded enough to, you know, allow for the other.
Scott, do you think that there's a difference between being open-minded and refusing to concede on moral points that shouldn't even be up for interpretation or debate? I mean, if somebody, for example, if somebody calls my show and they say something racist, I'm not going to say, well, that's your opinion. I'm going to tell them they're a jerk. If somebody calls my show and starts spewing stuff about how climate change isn't real, I'm going to tell them to consult the science and to not call my show again until they get it right. Because those are things that are not disputable to me. Racism is bad. Climate change is real.
Absolutely. But at the same time, I think in order for things to work, we're going to have to try to take a more understanding approach to it and not necessarily be as critical and judgmental, because people don't respond well to judgment. Carl Jung said that people thinking is hard, and so that's why people just judge. And there are more ways to approach an uneducated person in order to help them to, you know, reach the next rung and rise above. There, you know what I mean? Like, ultimately, just like slapping them down is, in essence, not going to encourage them to reach up. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the way my kids said it, it was just like so non-judgmental and so not critical, but just basically like the basic awareness that, you know, I mean, there's an old saying too, that mine is the right to be wrong. Like the way we learn and the way we grow and evolve is by trial and error and mm-hmm. having learning experience, and everybody's experience is individual and unique. And so therefore, part of the whole concept of American freedom is about you having the free space to have your experience. And again, I'm not trying to legitimize any bogus, you know, political perspective or social, you know, construct. I'm just saying that, you know, we're all different to some degree or another. We're all experiencing this thing through our individual little, you know, reality tunnel glasses. And, you know, hopefully at least, you know, I think like with regards to like the voter turnout this last election, and people are just amazed at how Georgia was flipped. And I'm like, really? Because if you look at history, you can plainly see why there would be an uptick in, you know, and a pushback against what they see happening. It's fairly self-evident. But for some, not so much. You know what I mean? So they just need to kind of figure it out. You know, you got to walk through it, but you got to be conscientious. And typically people that are like browbeaten down, or if they're like internally, they don't have a real sense of self-worth,
mm-hmm.
they're inclined to take on criticism in a very negative way that just, they just push back against it.
Sure.
So that's why we see
or like just reject it altogether, like certain
policy.
People. All right.
Right.
Yep. Scott, thank you so much for the call. Interesting points, and keep raising your son right.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Day.
You too. Bye bye. You know what Scott said about people don't like to be judged. People don't like to be browbeaten. You saw that happen a little bit here, I think, with the Florida Democratic Party in the November elections. Democrats took a walloping in Florida this year. Hillsborough County Democrats were outliers. They did very well, but statewide, you know, we lost two congressional seats. We lost five seats in the Democrats, rather, lost five seats in the Florida legislature. Trump won the state by significantly more than he won it in 2016. It was not pretty. And a lot of the Monday morning quarterbacking after that election really showed that Democrats approached the election campaigning in such a way that it sounded like they knew better. They were talking about the issues that they wanted voters to care about instead of the issues that voters actually cared about. Whereas Republicans were getting out into communities and they were finding out specifically community to community, neighborhood to neighborhood, what's important to you. And they were catering those messages right down to the local level to really hit on the issues that voters wanted to talk about. And Democrats didn't do that. So it'll be interesting to see if they learn from those lessons and take that into 2022 and really start to implement a more, you know, we're listening, not telling you what you should be listening to sort of strategy. So great point, Scott. Thank you so much for the call. I want to go through some emails and text messages here for a second. If you're just tuning in to Midpoint Friday, I'm Janelle Irwin. We've got one line open. The number to call is 813-239-9663. First off, Rob was kind enough to send this over. A Pew Research poll actually shows that only 29% of those polled now want President Trump to continue to play a role in American politics. And that brings up what I received in another email from a listener pointing out that the impeachment was necessary because it sets up a process to not only convict Trump in the Senate, but then to also make it so that he could never run for federal office or hold federal office ever again, which he has clearly stated on more than one occasion that he has intentions to run for president again in 2024. So that process is a little bit complicated. It would require a two-thirds vote to convict him in the Senate first, and then a simple majority vote in order to ban him from federal office after that. So that's how that would go down. But that could not have happened without impeachment happening first. We've got another Another email here. My wife, who has taught pre-K, translated this tweet or put it in context for me. What Matt Gaetz is really saying here is they did it first. And then it links to a Matt Gaetz tweet in which he says that the left lit actual flames, actual fires. Okay, so let's pause on this for a second. Then I'm going to get back to the phones. So they lit... The left lit actual flames, actual fires. This is clearly a reference to the Black Lives Matter protests over the summer in response to the police killing of George Floyd, in which an officer put his knee on his neck for 8 minutes. Because, yeah, that's how we do things. Sure, there was looting. There were fires. There were bad people doing bad things in those protests. And those people were condemned, they were arrested, and they were dealt with. The vast majority, especially in Florida, the vast majority of protests were peaceful. The only death that occurred as a result of any of those protests happened because a gun-toting underage vigilante who was a Trump supporter decided that he was going to bring a gun to a protest and play cop, and the cops let him play cop, and he ended up killing someone. And now he's facing murder charges. That's the only blood on anybody's hands. Yes, property destruction, all that, I get it, that's bad. But the only blood on anybody's hands from Black Lives Matter protests over the summer is Kyle Rittenhouse, who was on the right side, not the left side. Just throwing that out there for anybody who wants to compare Black Lives Matter protests to an insurrection at the Capitol, which, by the way, 5 people died. And a 6th one, an officer, committed suicide after the fact, and it's largely believed that it was related to trauma from the events of January 6th. So kind of going with apples to oranges there, if anybody is out there making that comparison. We have Camellia back with us. I'm so sorry. Did I say your name right? I tried to get you at the beginning of the show and we were having an issue. I'm glad you called back. What's on your mind?
It's Camellia. You're fine. Several things, actually. First and foremost, is when I came back from lunch here, I was listening, and why are we even back at the whole abortion debate? It was settled with Roe versus Wade. Leave it alone. When I was young, I had to make the decision to terminate a pregnancy, and it was the best thing for me. And I don't think any governing body has a right to govern my body, plain and simple. It's my body. It's my choice. And even as a postmenopausal woman now, I will vehemently defend any woman's right to choose. I don't feel that the U.S. has any business being in my uterus.
I don't think white men
really support,
have any business.
Birth control education is very important. As far as the impeachment goes, it should have been done a long time ago when there was election interference, for the president to continually say that the election was stolen. He was saying it was rigged before the election even occurred, for months and months and months, and probably more than a year. It's just wrong, and I feel that had he not been doing that, he very well could have been president again. If he would have behaved better and acted like a human being instead of a tyrant and an instigator, he probably would still be president, and maybe, gotten some decent things done, but instead nothing got done, and what got done was just horrific. And I think we're going to feel the effects for years and years and years to come. It is completely inexcusable. I fear that, if the proper consequences don't take place and for some reason he's acquitted, it's just going to green light this kind of behavior in the future. And the last thing that I have to say is that I had a friend who was a Republican, a staunch Republican, and he would constantly tell me, we do not live in a democracy. We live in a republic. The United States is a republic, not a democracy. And I'd sure like to know what the heck he meant by that, because he never could fully explain himself at all. And
we're not strictly a democracy. He is correct in that assertion. My husband would be much better at explaining this than I am. He's a U.S. historian, so. But basically, we're not a direct democracy. We're a constitutional democracy, and
right.
We have the Electoral College, we have Congress, we have all that sort of stuff. So he is accurate. But a lot of people like to use the Republic thing as kind of a dog whistle.
The other thing, and I have one more thing to say, actually. I think it's high time, and if people haven't figured it out by now, I think this should be, the crowning telltale sign that it's time for the Electoral College to go, because if it were just the popular vote, none of this would have occurred. None of it.
Good luck getting Republicans on board with that, because if we went with the popular vote, they'd probably never win a presidential election again.
Well, gee, wouldn't that just be awful?
No comments. Camelia, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Skinny.
Thank you so much to everybody who's still on hold and being patient here. Let's go to Ned in Bel Air Bluffs, who has been especially patient. Ned, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
A simple way to maybe blunt some of the power of these right-wing fanatics is to remove the tax-exempt status of the churches. And that's all I have to say.
Ooh, yay. You gave me an opening to brag about one of my favorite stories that I've ever done. All right, so years ago, for those of you who are WMNF longtime listeners know that back in the day, I used to be a staff reporter here at WMNF. Golly, it's been a lot of years. I don't even remember how many since I was on staff here. But anyways, back in those days, I'll never forget the day, because it was literally the day after I met my husband for the first time. So maybe there was like karma there or something. I don't know. But anyways, I go to this. I had stayed up way too late with him the night before on our first date. And I go, tired as all get out, to this this meeting of leaders of large religious institutions and the Liberty Council. And the Liberty Council, which is a conservative group of like lawyers who challenge attacks on conservative policies or try to get conservative policies approved. So they were speaking with these leaders of large church congregations to teach them how to get around tax exempt rules to keep their tax exempt status as a religious institution. And it was, so the craziest part about it wasn't that I went to this thing and listened to their spiel. It was that they had no obligation to let me. This was a private event. They could have told me to go pound sand and not let me in the door. But I came and I was like, hi, I'm a reporter. I put on a slight Southern twang because for some reason that really works with conservatives. And they let me in. And I listened to this whole thing and I was like, holy crap. What am I hearing right now? They even let me record it. Craziest thing I've ever heard. I mean, it was like straight up breaking the law. And they let me do, and the guy clearly didn't listen to my report after it played, because he called and left me a voicemail and was like, thank you so much for listening to what we had to say. I'm like, oh, buddy, you did not hear what happened with this information. Anyways, I digress. We've got about 6 minutes left here in the show. Let's go to Dino in Tampa. Dino, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Janelle? Great show. I just want to tell you from someone that is a practicing Christian, and let me explain what I mean by that, and I'll compare and contrast what you spoke of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. I do believe that he is the Son of God and the Savior of man. Now, the Bible, as it's represented, is either a period in time when all these crazy, fantastic things happened, or it's an allegory for certain things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go more with the allegory. Could I be wrong? Sure. Maybe people did come out of the belly of whales, and maybe Moses did part these. I wasn't there. I can't say.
But I'm going to go with allegory. I'm with you on that.
You're right. That these Christians that are supporting Trump are making a mockery of what true Christianity is, and Jesus weeps because of what they do. Okay? Jesus doesn't judge people. You want to be a Wiccan, be a Wiccan. You want to be an atheist, be an atheist. My faith compels me to love you no matter what.
Sure.
And to not judge you. So it's a marriage of convenience, because Bugs Bunny could stand up there and say, I'm against abortion and gay marriage, and you're their guy.
I know.
It doesn't matter. So they essentially, to use the metaphor, sold their souls to get what they wanted. Now, you can find numerous Christian scholars, men of great faith, women of great faith, that greatly oppose Donald Trump and see what he truly is. He doesn't represent faith. He represents the opposite of that. So if people want to practice what they practice, they should be able to practice what they practice. I practice practical Christianity. And let me explain briefly, because I know you have other people you want to get to. You know, Jesus wants people, God, if you will, wants people to be honest, love one another, take care of people, do right, respect one another, respect your parents. What have I been doing in the pandemic? I like to cook. So I make big meals on the weekend and take them to my neighbors, because maybe they can't get out to eat. Maybe they need a meal. Maybe they do that. You know what? Jesus said to feed people. That's good advice. I'm going to go with that. And if people want true, true examples of Christianity, I'm going to give you two. Mr. Rogers, ordained minister, okay, and Jimmy Carter. We can debate the political ability of Jimmy Carter when he was the president. That's a whole different show. But look at his works before and after. Always trying to help people, hanging out with rock and roll stars that partied, never judging them one time. He'd have the occasional drink himself. So when people say they're Christians and they support Donald Trump, I understand they're married to the marriage issue, if you will, and the abortion issue, but those that are his most zealot protectors aren't people of faith. They're hypocrites. You keep up the good work, and thank you for the opportunity for me to allow you to speak on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'll take your brand of Christianity any day of the week, and I tell you what you should do. You should restart the trend with the What Would Jesus Do bracelets.
Yeah, 100%.
There you go.
100%.
There's a business idea for you. There might be some royalties that you have to pay. I don't know how to consult a lawyer.
We can talk about that down the road.
Have a good one, Dino. Thank you for the call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We're down to just a few minutes left here on Midpoint Friday. I am Janelle Irwin. It has been a lively conversation so far. Let's go now to Jared in St. Petersburg. Jared, what's on your mind?
Hey, Janelle. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious about something, because we seem to be going in the wrong direction in this country, and between political values or moral values, whatever. But, you know,
I don't know. We lost you, Jared. I apologize for that, but we'll hopefully get you back here before the end of the show. So much is on the slate today. Nobody even commented on the stimulus. I guess we're all still just holding our breath. Next Friday, fun fact, next Friday when I'm on air, will be the first time in 4 years that I'm on the air when Donald Trump is not president. Hey. Let's go to Mike in Sarasota. Mike, what's on your mind? Mike?
I want to respond to something somebody else said. They were saying, that the Black Lives Matter protesters don't kill people.
Hold on. I heard you on Rob's show, so I already know what you're going to say, and I'm going to shut you down before you even say it.
I'm talking about the Black Lives Matter protesters not being violent. In Dallas, 4 police officers were shot by Black Lives Matter protesters, and people are forgetting that. And if you don't believe that BLM protesters are violent, then just ask any of those property owners in New York City or Chicago who knew that if they stood in the way of those rampaging mobs, the people who were out to steal stuff, that they would have been killed.
Okay, so Mike, I'll let you have that and not even try to contest anything that you're saying. But what I am going to do is this, and I hardly have any time here, so I'm going to try to make this really fast. Just because one happened doesn't mean it's okay that the other happened. That's a false equivalency. It's a whataboutism that's nonsensical. Second of all, the biggest question, hold on, Mike, the biggest problem here is that there was a massive response, a massive police response to Black Lives Matter protests, which all as a whole were mostly peaceful, but there were known threats of this Stop the Steal protest coming. And what was the response? Like nothing. That's the problem. Okay. So make all your arguments that you want about violent Black Lives Matter people because you don't like black people. Do that all you want. But it doesn't change the facts.
You know that's unfair. If there was a Black Lives Matter protest in your neighborhood, I guarantee you, you would be ready for violence. Because
no, I wouldn't. I'd be out there with them.
Well, take a look at Chicago. Take a look at Los Angeles. Take a look at New York. Oh, just take a look at Atlanta. Take a look at Dallas. Lots and lots of violence attends these protests. It's a historical fact.
I wish we had more time, Mike, but unfortunately I'm out of time. Thank you so much for calling, and I'm sorry for yelling at you. Thank you so much to everybody who tuned in and everybody who called and participated in this conversation today. Thanks to Frank for being on the boards and Cindy for wrangling the phones. Stay tuned for Joellen for Art in Your Ear. From all of us here at WMNF Tampa, happy Friday.